Welcome to your Found Family podcast, where we don't just have a heart-to-heart, we connect soul to soul. I'm your host, Lizzie, a certified coaching practitioner who found family outside of blood family. In our Found Family, you are accepted and assured that you are not alone. Subscribe and tune in for educational and empowering soul chats with women from all over the world, talking about well-being, personal growth and development, and mental and emotional health. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Found Family. I'm really excited to have another special guest with me here today, Celine, and we're going to be talking about how to improve your mental health and keep creating. Celine is an author, coach, trainer, and podcaster passionate about creativity and well-being. She studied physics under the master level, but decided ultimately that she wanted to work in the creative sector. In 2012, she moved to London, where she started working in the theater industry alongside writing. She published several short stories in magazines. She produced a short film, and she recently completed her first sci-fi young adult novel. Now she helps other creatives reach their potential and live a happy life. The Part-Time Artist is her first nonfiction book, and she is currently working on her second book, Happy Not Tortured. Amazing. Celine, welcome. I'm so happy to have you.
I'm very, very excited.
Thank you. Wonderful. So your bio is so beautifully written and shares so much already about you, but I would love to start off with asking for you to just tell us a little bit more about yourself, even before you became a coach.
Yes, of course. So I was born in Belgium, as you might hear from my French accent. And as you said, I studied physics, I studied science, because I think at the time in Belgium, doing something creative is not necessarily seen as a career, it's more seen as a hobby, and I was good with science, so I studied that. But then I started working in science after my master, and I realized it was not really my thing at all. I was just craving for having more creativity in my life. I had been writing quite a lot, but I really wanted to do more. So I quit in 2009. But you know, when I quit, it was not a very easy transition at all, because not only I quit a career, but I also quit all the expectations that I put on myself, other people put on me. And at the time I had a depression after that. I think it was also because, while I knew I wanted to be a creative, I wanted to be a writer, it was very difficult to set new goals and to really see where I could go. I don't know if that makes sense, but when you're a scientist, it's like you do a master, then you do a PhD, then you become a professor or something. It's kind of like, it's a really clear and easy to understand path. At least it was in my head. But when you are a writer or a creative, it's way more difficult to understand and to set yourself goals and just to see yourself progressing as it goes. But then fortunately I found a way to set myself different goals, to be nice with myself and just try to not see the fact that I quit science as a failure, but more as I tried something, it didn't work, and so now I'm trying something else. I moved to the UK in 2012 to become a professional writer or creator. I was not really sure. And I ended up working in theatre out of all different businesses, which was, it was great. I kind of ended up in theatre a little bit out of luck, but it was great just being surrounded by creative people, just working in this completely different industry than the science that I was used to. But the problem was, I started kind of resenting a little bit the fact that, yes, I was working in this industry, but I was not really producing anything creative. I was not, you know, writing all these books that I hoped I would write. I even did a short film, but then I didn't continue in that kind of film making endeavor. And I started developing anxiety, which has followed me through. I still suffer from anxiety now. So it's kind of like all these experiences and all the fact that I was also surrounded by actors, by creatives, by writers, by directors all the time, made me really reconsider and observe what it is to be an artist right now, what it means, and also what are the different problems you face when you decide, okay, I want to be an artist. And I find that a lot of people were suffering from the same thing, being pushed maybe towards a career that they didn't like just because, you know, your parents want to make sure you are going to be able to earn money. So I do understand why they push you towards that. And then when you choose to become an artist, you face problems with money, you face problems with rejection, criticism, etc. And a lot of us develop things like depression, things like anxiety at different stages of our career. So that's why I created the Part-Time Artist to be able to assist people in all these different problems.
Wow. We are kindred spirits, Celine. I am just sitting here like nodding my head about everything that you just shared. And the biggest thing that really resonated with me was when you said about how creatives, you know, sometimes find difficulties in like a quote unquote path. And being a creative myself, you know, I went to school for finance and economics because that was, again, like what my parents, you know, believed to be kind of the path, and quickly learned that that was definitely not what I am passionate about or have, you know, a desire to really grow into that, like the career path. And then I sort of found myself wondering like, well, what is next? And I, you know, I think that creatives do have like a very entrepreneurial spirit because we think differently and we sort of, you know, use the other side of our brain more than, you know, the more structured like side, and to find the path of, okay, well, what is next? You know, what could I do? What are, you know, the very specific things that I want to use my creative skills for, which, you know, can lead to depression and anxiety. And I can also attest and share that in a very similar way, that is also, what contributed to my level of anxiety and depression is not knowing like what that next path is. So I completely hear you. And it is also really great to hear that from another creative, like to be able to really relate and sort of hear our stories in one another, which again is really the mission of this podcast, is to help people feel like they're not alone. Because I think that when we go through these life stages and we're trying to navigate from one thing to the next, we do feel like we're alone when we're going through it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do too, is just to talk about it and to kind of dare to expose myself, just to show to people that, you know what you're thinking? I think it too. At least there's two of us, you know, you're not on your own.
Yes, absolutely. And so how did anxiety and depression hinder your creativity?
It's actually a very interesting question because depression and anxiety, as you know, it's kind of like two sides of the same coin, I find, at least in my experience. And with depression, what I found was when I had a depression after I quit my career in science, I just couldn't create. I couldn't find anything that would inspire me to put in the work to do anything. So I didn't write for over a year at all. Well, you know, the writing had been the thing that I was doing through everything, and not writing at all, just because I couldn't find the energy and the motivation, because nothing really made sense, nothing mattered. And I was just thinking, well, why am I putting this energy in writing? Because I don't have any goals. I don't know where I'm going. I just don't have any hope. You know, one of the big thing that I thought at the time was like, I'm too old now. I've wasted my chance to do something creative because I've spent all these years doing all the scientific studies. So yeah, it was really powerful stop to anything creative. While anxiety, the difference with, that I find with anxiety is that I can still do things, but everything I do is bad. That's what I think. It's like, well, there's no point in trying because everything you do is horrible. You are just like, you're the worst writer that's ever been, ever. And thing you try is not perfect, so therefore it's not great.
Definitely. Those are self-doubt and limiting beliefs that I've, you know, definitely thought as well. And as I personally am learning more about obsessive compulsive disorder, which is, you know, something else that I've been struggling with and battling with and living with since childhood, I've learned more about the brain and how it thinks and the power of questions. And the more time that I personally spend, you know, ruminating and asking myself the same questions, like in a similar way, you know, why do I feel like this isn't good enough? Why do I feel like I have no motivation or goals or creative, you know, juices to keep me going? Like, why? It was spiraling more and more into like a deeper level of depression and anxiety, because that was really where my brain was focused. It was the only thing that was, you know, on the top of mind. And so when we're talking about creatives more specifically, in what ways have you observed other artists making their mental health worse?
Well, one of the first things that I have observed working in theater, and also I've read studies and everything, is that people in creative industry, they are more susceptible to mental health problems. I read a study from the Ulster University saying that workers in creative industry are 3 times more likely to develop a mental health problem than the general population. And it's due to different factors. One of them is the nature of the work, because when you're an artist, you are very likely to work weird hours. You know, you don't work the 9 to 5 that people maybe in different jobs work. You don't have long-term contracts, you have money problems, your productivity depends on how you feel. So of course your income is also going to depend on how you feel. So all the nature of the work is an explanation for that. But also there's a lot of toxic culture in the creative industry. There's very little respect for the work. You can ask so many artists where they've been asked by so many people to do things for free. If you're, you know, a musician, you've been asked to do a gig for exposure only. All these kind of things show a very lack of respect for people in the creative industry. So the environment, the just simple fact of living in that industry is one thing that is going to make someone's mental health worse. That's the first thing. But then I've read also a lot about the fact that the way we think as an artist might be also a sort of fertile soil for depression, anxiety, and different kinds of things. There are actually studies at the moment, scientists are studying, if it is just an environment thing, or if it is the way our brain is wired that makes our creativity, better, but also just makes us more susceptible to different types of problems. There's been research that writers might be more susceptible to becoming bipolar or developing symptoms of bipolar. Things like that. It's a big question at the moment in the scientific world for people who study that, because we don't know if it's just the environment or if it's the way your brain is wired. And there's also a lot of really toxic beliefs that people have, things like the tortured artist. That's why I named my book The Happy Not Tortured, because I hate, it's such a stereotype that I absolutely hate, that people think that to be a good artist, to produce something that is worth it, you have to be tortured. You have to have demons. Otherwise, everything you produce is not deep enough. It doesn't have any relevance. Wow. And, you know, I call BS on that, because I think it's absolutely wrong. And it has created so many, you know, so much pain, and so many artists who, you know, took their own life or went into drug and alcohol to just deal with these things. And it's the kind of things that can make your mental health worse if you have that belief that you have to feel bad to produce your work, you know?
Wow. That is so powerful. And I can't believe that I didn't even make that association. Thank you for for shedding light on that, because you're so right. And I am standing there with you, like calling BS too. The fact that, you know, the tortured artist, I honestly, like, I think because it's become so, as you said, like, you know, it's sort of like what people expect needs to be in order to produce creative work. So it's almost become streamlined, or like in the mainstream, I should say, like it's become like a mainstream kind of cliche thing that when you say like the tortured artist, it's almost like you're saying something without really understanding the meaning behind it. And that goes with a lot of the cliche sayings. I think that unfortunately, even with cliche sayings, you know, we overuse them so much to the point where then when you actually say it with like a genuine energy, like, you know, everything happens for a reason, or like whatever, pick something, you know, that's cliche, but then you say it and you're like, wow, I actually know how this means to me. It's so overused that it looked as a cliche. The tortured artist, it's like, wow, I don't know, my there's like some light bulbs and sparks that are going off right now, because that is an amazing association. And just to add to that, I recently read a book by Barnett Bain called The Book of Doing and Being. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of it or if you've ever read it yourself. But
no, I haven't, but I'm going to make a note of it.
Oh my gosh. And you know what? I'm going to share this in the description as well, because it is one of those books that really, really pivots the idea of like the tortured artist and really complements what you just shared about, you know, instead of going into those emotions and really like making your mental health worse in order to produce, he helps share that in order to get the juices flowing, it's like going into a state of like positivity and really shifting your mindset in the way that you approach something creative. And he actually says in the book that when you're open to that kind of energy, you're actually pouring in more creativity. So it was an amazing book to read. And there's also exercises in there. And he does a lot of like very specific like 1-2-3s of how to do things and things like that. And, you know, this whole conversation is also just like making me more eager and excited to read your books, because I'm sure that there's a lot of like golden nuggets in there. And we could do a part two, like a book review or something, and you know, have you as like the author guest speaker. But
I would love that.
I would too. I think that would be a lot of fun, because this, again, you know, is a really important topic, because, you know, a lot of us are creatives, and especially since, you know, personally, it's such a near and dear topic to my heart. You know, I would love to keep talking about this, but that is such an amazing revelation and like association that you helped share. And thank you so much for sharing that.
I'm very glad that helped.
Of course. And another thing that you and I had talked about in terms of your book, speaking of, is the examining our mental health diet. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. Yeah, so the idea of my book, it's a book about prevention mostly, but it can help at any stage depending on what you know what you're suffering with or something. But it's basically watching everything that we do that make our mental health worse. So I call it the mental health diet because I'm making the comparison with junk food and no exercise. You know, if you do that, if you eat junk food all the time, you don't exercise, on the long term, you know, if you do it once, it's okay. But on the long term, if you do it every day for several years, your body is going to suffer. You're going to have, diabetes or, you know, heart problems or, you know, weight problems, all these kind of things. Well, mental health for me is exactly the same. If you have a good diet for your mental health, on the long term, you're going to feel better than if you have a bad diet. And what I call diet is so many different things. It's all the habits that you have that is going to make you feel better or feel worse. So it can be the things that you put in your brain. If you constantly are, you know, watching the news, it is a habit that I have. It's just watching the news and it's always negative, negative, negative. It is going to give you an impression of a hopeless world. And if you do that every day, it is going to change your mood. But it's also things like if you have the bad habit of comparing yourself to people, competition, unhealthy, these kind of things. And I see that in the creative industry a lot. People who just keep scrolling on social media to see other artists who are succeeding better and it makes them feel bad. Things like having toxic people around you. On the long term, toxic people can really impact your mental health. And it can impact even your health, you know? So all these kind of things, my idea is just to observe what you're doing on a daily basis and understand if it's serving you or not serving you. If it's not serving you, maybe it's time to change some of these habits and include more helpful habits into your diet.
Wow. Could not agree more. And that's so beautiful. And I'm so grateful to you and honor you for what you're doing and all of the amazing things that you're helping people realize and bring into their lives. That topic, mental health, diet, as you shared, you know, with all the different things that fall under that umbrella are so vital to improving mental health. And I really couldn't agree more. And I think that, you know, when we look at, you know, the physical versus the mental, unfortunately, it's so much easier to see when someone is, you know, physically, you know, there's something physically wrong, like you're sick and your face gets white, or, you know, you broke a finger and you can physically see the bone that's broken. But when it comes to mental health, it is different. And people do really need to take more of an inventory of the kinds of thoughts, the kinds of questions, you know, all the things that you just shared. That really is, you know, so important. And so to be able to, you know, really examine that is, you know, mm-hmm. step one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But I understand it's also difficult sometimes to realize that you're doing something that is maybe impacting your mental health. So in the book, I give a lot of examples of things that I do myself that I didn't realize were making me feel bad, but actually it does. So for example, I share, there's a section about arguments in your head, because that's something that I do all the time. I'm going to do something mindless, like cooking or doing the dishes and everything, and I'm going to invent a fight in my head with something that I just read or something that happened 3 years ago, and now I found the perfect way of responding to that person. And I work myself up to the point where I get in a very, very bad mood, because I get into a really bad argument in my head. And I do that all the time. And until someone pointed out to me that maybe it could be a form of rumination, I didn't realize that was something that I was doing so often. So that's why in the book, I give a lot of examples of things that I do, or things that I used to do, that would make me feel bad, because a lot of the time, until someone says, oh yeah, I'm doing that, you don't have the light bulb moment thinking, oh my God, I do that all the time.
Right, that's so true. And so that's a really great segue into the question of the hour, if you will, which is, how can we change these habits?
So my way of doing that, and that's why I describe also in the book, is first understanding why we do what we do. There's an amazing TED Talk from Tony Robbins that talks about that, why we do what we do, talking about all the behaviors that we have. They answer certain needs and they answer certain expectation of ourselves or a certain purpose that we have. And until we understand exactly why we do that and what it means to us, it's very difficult to make any long-lasting change. It's the same kind of way. It's very difficult to change your food diet if you don't have a very, very good reason to do it. It's very difficult to change your mental health diet if you don't understand why you were doing that and why you want to change and what's your purpose. So I have a chapter called Hopes and Expectations, and it's really examining your goals and understand why you're doing what you're doing. And in terms of an artist, what is the meaning of your work? What is the meaning of your creativity? Why, what is the meaning that you put it on yourself? And what's your purpose? And how do you keep up with your purpose? And it's very difficult sometimes to understand that, because we have a lot of toxic and negative feelings associated sometimes with our creativity or with what we want to do with our life. We have guilt. You know, maybe your goal is to become a very successful artist, but you're guilty because that means that maybe you're neglecting your family a little bit. Or you're guilty because your parents put on you a sort of expectation that you have to be that kind of person, and you're not that kind of person. So it's really examining all these things before you start doing a change to make sure that it's long lasting. And then when you identify a habit that you don't like, is a way of changing one habit at a time and replacing it with something. I don't know if you've read the book, The Power of Habit. I think that's the name of it. It's a fantastic book. I really, really recommend it. And it talks about the habit loop. So the habit loop starts with a trigger, then you have a routine, the thing that you do, and then you have a reward. And until you understand your trigger, why you start doing something, and then change the routine and continue rewarding yourself, you are going to keep that habit going. So things like in the book, he talks about smoking. You have a trigger. Maybe your trigger is that you want 5 minutes to yourself. And then the routine is smoking, and the reward is that you had some peace and you had the nicotine and everything. Well, maybe you can find a way to change the routine to have a sort of reward. And in mental health, that is also something that you can do if your bad habit is, let's say you are never saying no to anyone, like you are a people pleaser, which I am, and I'm trying to change. And the reward is people get, you know, it's something that we a lot of people do. And especially, I think, as a woman, it's something that you are taught also to do, which I talk about also in the book. But people pleasing, the reward of that is that people are happy with you, right? So you don't really want to change that routine, which is saying yes to everything that people ask you, because you get the reward. Now, if you change that into something different, maybe establishing limits, but trying to be there when, you know, there's important things, that can still give you a reward. So it's the kind of thing you have to first understand what you do, and then change that a vicious circle that keeps you doing those habits over and over again, and changing it into something that is more productive. But what I really recommend is do it one at a time. You can't change everything overnight. That's not realistic. You are going to go back into your old habits very quickly if you do that.
Right. That's key. And that, you know, level of overwhelm sometimes can often trigger depression or anxiety, because if someone takes a look at, okay, I have now come to realize that I have, you know, these three or four habits of thinking where I'm comparing myself, I'm, you know, putting myself down, I'm trying to people please, I'm trying to strive, you know, and be perfect. There's too many things that I need to change. I don't know how to do it. I don't have the capacity to even, you know, take those things and break them down into smaller pieces. So I'm just going to keep doing what I've been doing. And that's really how we get stuck in that cycle. So absolutely, like, agree with you that the first way that we can change our habits is to pick one. And it doesn't have to be in any particular order. It doesn't have to even be in, like, the ranking of, you know, well, how significant would this habit, you know, help as opposed to this one? Because I think that even could contribute to a level of overwhelm and anxiety. So it's sort of like, you know, journaling is something that helps me personally. And, you know, although I'm not like a professional writer and haven't done writing, you know, outside of just what I do for my own self, I do enjoy writing my thoughts and journaling, because it helps me to really download everything, process information, and then remember things, because once it's written on paper, it's written, and then you can always go back to it. So it's sort of like taking those baby steps, one step at a time. And I also love how you shared about the TED Talk by Tony Robbins. He's actually the one who is training me through his program for my life coaching certificate. So I've been having a lot of, you know, coaching from his way of helping people understand like the six human needs, which, you know, as a whole are certainty, uncertainty, significance, love and connection, growth and contribution. And to your point, when we develop these habits, what we're really trying to do is change the way that we feel about something, the way that we feel about ourselves. And so the way in which we fuel these human needs defines how and why we do things. And that really is so important to really take a step back and understand which of those human needs are we really trying to fulfill? And that really helps kind of break down those habits. So that's really wonderful that you're both practicing this in your personal life and helping to really bring this light to the creative. You know, it really comes full circle of everything that we've just been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and again, in a similar way to kind of piggyback off of that, in what ways can artists tap deeper into their creativity and keep creating?
So I think the first thing to realize when you're an artist is that it's a marathon. And I think not enough people are aware of that. When you choose a career as an artist, or even if you just do it on the side, because it doesn't have to be a career that pays, it is going to take time. And that's something that I say in pretty much everything in my blog, in my podcast, and in my previous book. It's going to probably take more time than you think. And you have to make sure you have coping mechanisms to make you last that long time. And that's something I have realized by talking with different artists, and especially actors, when they go to drama school or when you go to art school, there is nobody talking about that, about the fact that it's going to take a long time and you have to make sure your mental health and you are just making yourself strong enough to last maybe 10 years, maybe 20 years without having a proof of your success yet. And that is extremely, extremely difficult. And I really would love to have, you know, contacts with schools to maybe add that to them, to their curriculum, to just have a way of saying, yes, you might be lucky and you might have a big break in 6 months, but most artists, it takes a lifetime to get to a level of success. And you see big artists, they might make it later in life, or it might take just more than, you know, 6 months, more than a year. And so in the meantime, you have to, you know, pay your bills. You have to maybe find a job that you don't like, but you have to also keep creating at the same time. So it's all a question of, you know, keeping the creativity alive. I have I do a lot of exercise when I coach people how to continue, for example, doing something every day that is linked to your creativity. So for writers, you know, writers, they can write even 15 minutes. If you really don't have the time and you have a very long day at work, 15 minutes of, you know, putting down a very short story on your notepad just so that you do something that day, so that you keep that dream alive, you keep the inspiration alive. It's a muscle. If you don't do it for 2 weeks and then you expect doing it for a whole day, that's not going to work. You have to do it regularly. And also using your creativity to make yourself feel better. So doing creative exercises, just enjoying what you're doing is very important. And if you don't enjoy what you're doing anymore, which I've been through recently, I've had some issues writing fiction. Originally, I'm a fiction writer, but with the part-time artist, I started writing so much nonfiction and helping people. And it's brought me so much satisfaction, I think, that I don't find writing fiction as satisfying anymore. So now I'm doing some exercise to try to find a different way of doing it. And you can reinvent yourself. You don't have to be, it's not because you decided that you are a writer when you were 18 that you have to be a writer your whole life. A lot of artists change. They just find interest in different things. I've had a musical theater actor on my podcast who changed from that to working in fashion. because suddenly, you know, musical theater was not necessarily what he wanted to do anymore, and went to fashion because fashion was an interest. I love different things than just writing. So you can be all of that. It's just a question of, you know, doing it regularly enough and committing to that creativity for the rest of your life, and then you will find a way.
Beautiful. Oh, that's so nice. And I can't wait to hear that episode. It sounds super interesting. And you know, again, just being able to hear the similarities of stories where, you know, someone was in something that they didn't feel that connectiveness to, that level of passion, and then found something that, you know, really gave them that spark is so beautiful. So I can't wait to listen to that one as well. That's so great. And so which artists inspire you? Is there someone who has either inspired your work or inspired you personally?
Inspired my work is probably everyone I've ever read. I love, you know, watching something or reading something and being like, oh my God, that's awesome. I want to write something like that. But on a personal level, one of my big role models is Jane Fonda, just because I admire this woman so much, because she is the kind of person, she's an activist, she's creative, she's she doesn't take herself seriously, but also she reinvented herself all throughout her career, which is something that I think is very healthy as an artist. You don't have to be, you know, she started as this actress, you know, playing in these kind of she was in Barbarella, you know, these kind of films where she played on how she looked and her body and everything. And she went through different phases of her life until now, where she's in Grace and Frankie. I don't know if you watched that. It's one of my favorite series on Netflix. And she still is an activist. She got arrested several times in the past few months for her activism, for the climate change. She protests every Friday in Washington, and she gets arrested all the time. I mean, and she's over 80, and I'm like, wow, she's what I want to be when I grow up, you know.
That's amazing. Good for her. That's so cool.
Yeah, she's such a badass, and what I really admire in her is that. How outspoken she is and how unapologetic she is, and I think that's something I am really striving to do. And another artist that really inspires me is Elizabeth Gilbert. Especially her book Big Magic really changed my perception of creativity and inspiration and everything. I don't know if you've read it, but if you haven't,
I
really, really recommend. Oh, it's such a good book.
Such a good book. I read it like 3 years ago, but I still have it and all of my notes in it. And I agree, it is a fantastic read.
And I think if you are a bit lost, if you are a creative person, no matter what, like, being creative doesn't mean that you have to have, you know, written several books or made music or painted or anything. It's just, if you just feel like you want to do something creative and you don't know what, that's one of the books that I recommend to many people, because it's a such well written and so compassionate with everyone who just wants to create. And and because you asked me about artists inspiring me, I wanted to let you know, and also your listeners know, that I do something that was recommended by Gareth L. Powell. He's a science fiction writer, and he wrote a book that is called About Writing, but is really, really helpful for all kinds of artists, I find, is to do a list of people you admire. He calls them teachers, but you can call it whatever you want, on Twitter or on social media, on Instagram, whatever you use the most, so that you can keep in touch with whoever inspires you. And I love that, because it's a way of just getting an insight into the head, what they think at the moment, what kind of things inspires them and can inspire you. And I think it's really important to have that kind of list of persons that you can model, because no artist is really in a vacuum. You always have people inspire you, and I think it's really important to just keep that alive and see what they're thinking at the moment.
100%. And again, coming full circle from something that we talked about earlier, where it's this idea of knowing that what you're thinking and what you're going through, you're not alone. There are other people who think in very similar ways, and to be able to hear how they are thinking and processing information and, you know, breaking through any of the quote unquote, you know, creative blocks or whatever the case may be, just to be tapped in and really like tuned in as if it was like a radio station and you're scrolling through the channels and then you find something where you're really vibing with and you stay tuned into that channel, it's keeping you plugged in. And that's really beautiful. And I have to say, like, you know, books, journaling, everything truly saved my life. And I know that sounds, you know, really dramatic, but really like 3.5, like, it was probably about 3.5 years ago, you know, depression had gotten so bad to the point where, you know, I was experiencing suicidal thoughts and was having a lot of anxiety. And there was just so much going on in my personal life that the only thing that saved me was reaching, you know, the books like Big Magic. And that was part of, you know, if I could call it like my first series of novels that I started reading that were all about ways of shifting mindsets, perception changes, you know, again, tuning into the emotion of, you know, positivity and really understanding how I could help myself, you know, better manage all of the different, you know, anxieties and things that I was going through at the time. And I'm so truly beyond grateful for every single book that I have like ever read since. The six or so books that I read during that like darkest period of my life literally saved my life. And it's just incredible. Again, like the power that being tuned into these other creatives and artists have. And so, you know, again, talking about books and now that I'm, you know, even more beyond excited about your second book that's coming out, tell us a little bit more about it and when does it come out? When can we make sure that we're the first to grab copies?
So it comes out in March and it will be on online stores, so Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble. It's called Happy Not Tortured, a mental health guide for artists and creative people. And I am also planning to do the audiobook. It's going to take a little bit more time, but hopefully it will come out in the summer. So that's for that book. But right now, if you are interested, you can already buy my first book, which is The Part-Time Artist, which is in paperback, ebook, audiobook, and it has a chapter about mental health, but it's more concentrating on how to be able to be creative when you have to have a day job. So you can only do your artistic work part-time. So that's why it's called like that. And it talks about many different things, but it's more a question of motivation, time management, you know, earning money, these kind of things, and a little bit also about mental health, because that was already interesting me a year ago when I published it, and even more interested in it with this second book. But I wanted to get back to what you were saying about books that you read, because it's exactly the same for me. When I felt so depressed and I didn't know what to do and everything, books were really one thing that really helped me. And I think a lot of people dismiss self-help books saying, oh, well, one book is not going to change everything. That's maybe true. You know, one book might not be enough. But if you get into the habit of reading these things, of trying different techniques, different habits and things like that, that is going to help you. And also, books are easy to find. They're readily available. If you can't afford them, you can go to your library and get a book. Things like therapy and medicine might be more difficult to get to, or you might not even be able to get to that because you're feeling so bad, and maybe you need some encouragement from people who have gone through it first to then be able to contact a therapist, or being able to afford a therapist and things like that. I am absolutely a lot in favor of therapy and help and things like that, because treatments are very, very important, depending on the level, you know, of your anxiety or your depression. I've been through several therapies myself, but in the first place, sometimes you might have to wait months before you are able to see a therapist. So things like books, things like your podcast, things like YouTube videos and things like that, that can really, really help a lot of people just to feel a little bit less alone with what you're thinking.
Absolutely. And how beautiful is that, that books are, as you said, readily available at any time. Such a great point that you made, that, you know, if it's not possible to get a book right now, to go to visit the library. And, you know, even I used to go to like Barnes and Nobles and things, and you can literally pick up a book and sit down and, you know, go through some pages. No one kicks you out or anything. You could go buy and, you know, go buy a coffee. And even if you don't buy the book, you just go and sort of browse to see there's like self-help sections, mental health sections. So it makes it even easier to navigate. And that really is so beautiful. And I highly recommend, to your point, if those other resources or things are not available immediately, to sort of reach out to something that could be immediately available for you. So that's wonderful. And so as we are coming to a close, as I shared before, you know, the mission of this podcast is to highlight resilience and empower women who are living with mental illness in ways that they can overcome anxiety and depression and things like that. So what are sort of the last comments or sort of cherry on top things that you'd like to add that are ways that we can overcome anxiety, depression, improve mental health, and keep creating?
I think the first thing is really take ownership of everything that, you know, all your habits and the routines and the things that you do and everything. Take ownership of your own mental health, because that's how you're going to be able to change. You know, you're going to be able to create a routine, to get better habits, as long as you recognize that there are some things that you do that may maybe make it a bit worse. Of course, I mean, I understand that it's not just the whole thing. And that's why in my book, I have a part about the crisis strategies and things like that, because prevention doesn't do everything. Sometimes, you know, circumstances make it so much more difficult, but at least take ownership of that and say, okay, I'm going to do something active about it, whether it is to change your habit, create a routine, try creating more, having more creativity in your life, or researching for a therapy, going to see your GP and everything. So that's one thing. And the second thing is, it's so important to connect with other people who are going through the same thing as you. And I think that's exactly the mission of your podcast, which is why I love it. Absolutely. There are other people who are thinking exactly the same, who are going through the same thing, who are having the same struggles and difficulties. Connecting with them might be the first step for you to get to a place where you feel better. So yeah, taking ownership and then connecting with other people would be really what I want people to remember for this episode.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. Thank you so, so much. And, you know, I'm actually, I was just this morning going through Amazon and putting together a list of books that I'm continuing to add to my list of 2020 books. So I'm excited to add yours to the cart. Can't wait for March for your new one to come out. And as I shared earlier, you know, I would be honored and would truly be thrilled and love to have you again, so that, you know, when I've finished reading it, we can sort of do like a book club style episode and really dive deeper into the chapters. And, you know, even if it's like a couple series or something, that we're, you know, I really want to make sure that your message is going out and continuing to help people, because again, this is huge. So thank you so, so, so much.
I would love that. Absolutely. And thank you.
Of course. And so to my family, I want to encourage you to go and share all of your love and support and encouragement to Celine. She is on social media. I know that you and I connected on Twitter. Are there other social media platforms? I'll be sure to have all the links in the description, but just, you know, to kind of share where we can find you and follow you and help support you.
So I'm on social media at Celine Tanova in one word, but you can also find me on my website, theparttimeartist.com. And you can, if you type the part-time artist, you will find it anywhere, the book and the social media. I am thinking about restarting also my YouTube channel, but you have the podcast already there. So yeah, I have a lot of projects for 2020, but yeah. Thepartimeartist.com would be the best because then you have all the links to everything that I do, basically.
Fantastic. So be on the lookout. That is going to be in the description of this episode. And again, Celine, thank you so much. It has been such an honor and such a privilege. And I'm so excited and truly grateful for everything that you shared. Thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for giving me time to talk about this book because it really, really matters to me. And thank you just for being awesome.
Oh, thank you for being awesome.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and tune in next week for a new topic. To help spread the good vibes, please share this episode with friends and family. Or if you share on social, be sure to tag me at Coach Lizzie.